approach you from the minister of the training us a bit late. I'm told she took a morning flight, so she should be on her way to the meeting. The deputy minister, she's not well. She's consulting a doctor. She will not be able to join us. And there is an apology also from the CG. She will be attending an Auditor General meeting. I guess she's got a meeting with the AG. So those are the only apologies that we've received. I hope that the department is ready to give us a briefing. We are going to deal today with the Taba Municipal Fire Power Station, the authorization of the environmental authorization there. And we're also going to get a briefing from SOS on the second and third performance report. We've also received the request from SOS regarding the matter that we discussed the last time when we met with them. The request was for an extension to allow the board until the 4th of July to respond to the issues that were raised by the committee. So it's a 4-day extension, and I think that is a reasonable request from where I'm seated. And I think that the committee will not have a problem with that. I see Honorable Edward says no, she agrees. Honorable Makuela agrees. So, for the request is granted for the board to respond on the phone. So I hope honorable members are ready to engage. I'm told there was a conference in Gauteng this past weekend. Well, I was not around anyway, but where I was, it was bitterly cold as well, it's cold still. So it looks like this past weekend was a cold weekend. I hope it has not affected members in any way. Are we ready? Who's going to take us through?
Morning, morning, Chair and honorable members. We have the team in front of me from Legal Services, the LIA team. I have Mr. Ziat, who's the Director of Legal Appeals, who will take us through the presentation. Next to him is Sabelo Malava and Marcia Davis. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, colleagues from the Department, and everybody else here. Thank you, Honourable Chair, for the opportunity to present on the Tabamete judgment today. I'm going to take the Honourable Members through the implications of the High Court judgment in the matter between Earthlife Africa Johannesburg and the Minister of Environmental Affairs and others in respect of the proposed Tabamete coal-fired power station. If I just go briefly through the presentation outline, I think I just want to go into a bit of a summary of the case, and then once we're done with that, with some of the implications that the judgment will have on future projects with significant climate change implications. If we go through the first slide on the summary of the case, the case essentially sought to review and set aside the decision by the department to grant approval for the construction of a 1,200 megawatt coal-fired power station, as well as the minister's decision to dismiss the appeal by Earthlife. Earthlife maintained that the department was obliged to consider climate change impacts of the power station before granting an authorization, and that the department failed to do so. In her appeal decision of 7 March 2016, the minister recognized that climate change impacts of the proposed development were not comprehensively assessed prior to the issuing of the EA. She did feel that the impacts were adequately assessed, but not comprehensively assessed, prior to the issuing of the EA, and she therefore amended the authorization by inserting an additional condition that Tabamesi, the applicant in the matter, would undertake a climate change impact assessment prior to construction of the project. The climate change assessment is currently underway, and the draft report was made available at the time of the court proceedings. We are very close to receiving the final report on that, and Tabamesi are due to submit that final report for the minister's consideration during June 2017. Shortly after submission of that report, the minister can reconsider a decision in line with the judgment in the High Court. The court held in its judgment that a plain reading of Section 2401 of NEMA confirms that the climate change impacts are relevant factors that must be considered prior to issuing an EA, and that the injunction to consider any pollution, environmental impacts, or environmental degradation logically expects consideration of climate change impacts. The court also held that the absence of an express provision in the statute requiring that a climate change impact assessment does not entail that there is no legal duty for the department to consider climate change as relevant consideration. The court held, however, that in keeping with the minister's wide powers on appeal, that the minister should have instead adjourned the appeal and directed Tabamesi to undertake a climate change impact assessment during the appeal process, and to thereafter substitute her decision, or to substitute the department's decision with her own, which she didn't do. She added a condition to request that a climate change impact assessment be conducted post-authorization. In its relief, Earthlife sought the setting aside of both the authorization as well as the appeal decision in its entirety, and they had requested that the entire authorization and appeal processes commence anew. The court felt that that would be going too far and that it would not be appropriate relief. So the court held that the more proportional remedy would not be to set aside the EA, but rather to set aside the minister's ruling only in respect of the ground of appeal which addressed climate change issues, and to remit the matter of climate change impacts for reconsideration on that basis, and for the minister to then consider the new evidence that would be before her as a result of that assessment. The reconstituted appeal process, the court held, would therefore be able to proceed with the requisite speed to the advantage of all parties. Just to pause briefly, in terms of the department's argument and what the department and the minister had filed in its affidavit and the basis of the department's argument in court, was that the department felt climate change was adequately assessed during the EIA process. As the minister had conceded in a decision, it was not comprehensively assessed. However, the department felt that climate change assessment was not necessarily a prerequisite for environmental authorization purposes. Its importance was more around continued monitoring of the project and for data collection. The department also felt that in the absence of emission thresholds, it would be premature to include a requirement in the EIA process, making it mandatory for companies to consider climate change impacts. We also felt that it was inappropriate to assess climate change implications on a project-specific level, at least not yet. We felt that these considerations were also comprehensively assessed during the development of the Integrated Resource Plan for Electricity. It went through a comprehensive public participation process. And a significant number of submissions were made around climate change impacts in the development of the IRP. The climate change impact assessment would, however, allow the department to gather detailed information on current and anticipated future greenhouse gas emission rates, which the department, which is necessary to meet the department's current obligations under international law. A climate change impact assessment will also enable the department to monitor and assess the climate change impacts of the power station and to thereafter determine whether it is necessary to amend or supplement the conditions. And I think that that was ultimately the crux of the matter, that EarthLife felt by requiring that the climate change impacts be done post-authorization, what the minister was doing was rendering that climate change impact assessment into a tick box exercise. And we disagreed with that view in that following the climate change impact assessment, the minister and the department had a range of options available to them, either to amend the authorization or ultimately to set the authorization aside. The court ultimately disagreed with that view. Following on the Tabometi judgment, we've had to take steps to fully digest the implications and to ready ourselves both for assessing the climate change impact assessment on Tabometi, but also to understand what the implications of that would be for similar projects for coal-fired power stations, and in fact any project which would have significant climate change impacts. The department has recently published National Greenhouse Gas Emission Reporting Regulations. The aim of that is to introduce a single national reporting system for transparent reporting of greenhouse gas emissions. Companies that conduct certain activities must register and report on GHG emissions. And the declaration of greenhouse gases as priority pollutants and the National Pollution Prevention Plan regulations will also soon be published for implementation. As it stands, as I said, all projects that may have significant climate change impacts will now have to be subject to a climate change impact assessment. The minister is considering the judgment and considering the implications and considering what our options are in that respect. From a departmental perspective, a task team has been established to develop a climate change protocol that will be used as a yardstick to measure the adequacy of all climate change impact reports during the EIA process. And the aim of that ultimately will be that protocol will be consulted on with all the provinces and ultimately adopted by all competent authorities for implementation. And thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members.
Okay, thank you very much. It was a very brief report. Very, very brief indeed. What is this protocol? Can you just explain a bit about this protocol that
want to thank you, Honourable Chair. My apologies if the presentation was brief, but I will be able to elaborate if the members had any additional questions. I'm going to ask my colleague Sabelo, the Chief Director in the EIA section, who's leading that task team on developing the protocol to answer that question, Honourable Chair.
Yeah, you see, I've read the judgment. It's a very long judgment. And the intention for us to request the briefing is to get a comprehensive overview of the issues that were a bone of contention and what finally became the judgment. So I was surprised to see a very brief presentation when the issues were extensively ventilated and then a very detailed judgment in the case. I don't know what would be the reason behind that. Whether is it assumed that we know the case and the judgment, or I don't know. I don't know what is the reason behind that. Maybe we'll come back and clarify that. But let's get a explanation on the climate change protocol.
Thank you, Chair, and for the opportunity, and thanks, Honourable Member. As competent authorities that, or should I say, as the different departments that assesses applications relating to environmental impact assessment, we, as part of the way in which we do our work, we have standard processes standard processes that are in place that assist us to check whether a particular specialist report is adequate for us to accept. So in a way, we have what we look at as minimum requirements to satisfy whatever specialist reports we require as part of the environmental impact assessment process. Now, flowing from the judgment, our sense, and when we were synthesizing the judgment, our sense is that we needed something similar to that to check the adequacy of a climate change report, because before then there wasn't anything in place. So we have then started a process as DEA for now to draft a protocol that we will then, once we have drafted the protocol, we'll then take it through the other 9-10 competent authorities for adoption. All that it would address, it would say, what is it that you need to look for as a minimum in any climate change impact assessment? Basically, in the scope, everything that needs to be in that impact assessment. And once that is in place, then you as a competent authority, are in a position to adopt or accept that report. Maybe just to add, post that process, we're looking at trying to at adopting and using it universally in all the 11 competent authorities. But for now, because we needed to comply with the judgment and we have other appeal decisions that are still outstanding, we needed to start with that protocol. Maybe to speak specifically to the Tabamezi situation, I think. Some of you would know, honourable members, that as part of the draft report that had gone through now for public participation, already we had scoped the minimum requirements and we had approved the scope of work. So that piece of work that went into scoping that climate change impact assessment is also finding some length in that protocol that we're formulating as a department. So for Tabamezi, we used the scope of work as a standing protocol, but obviously for the other application we need to have something that is more consistent, something that is approved and embraced by all the 10 competent authorities. Thank you.
Okay. And then on slide number 6, on bullet point number 3, the absence of emission threshold, which my understanding is that there is a minimum emission standard that have been agreed to, that have been promulgated, so that do exist and are enforced now. So I don't know what emission thresholds that we're talking about here. Can we get an explanation, Grant, to speak?
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and good morning. And thank you for the opportunity. I think there are a couple of issues that within the department we're trying to balance here. One of those issues relates to increasing regulatory burden around specific issues. And this is one of the issues we are having to consider quite carefully in the discussions around developing a climate change response legal framework. The extent to which we can use existing legal instruments to respond versus the extent to which we need to develop new instruments. So that's where we are, and we're also in the process of really transitioning. So transitioning from a situation in which we have no specific legal instrument other than using existing legislation to a situation in which we are starting with the development of a specific legal instrument. In respect of the emission standards, the minimum emission standards are under the National Air Quality Act, and those minimum emission standards are for particulate matter, for sulfur dioxide, and for nitrogen oxide. So in that instance, the minimum emission standards apply to the so-called criteria pollutants. In respect of greenhouse gases, which are the main issue at hand here, what we have in place, as honourable members would know, is the first phase of a carbon budgeting framework for industries that are high emitters. And at this stage, there's no legal framework for that. But we're moving towards some legal framework for the carbon budgeting. The final point, honourable chair and honourable members, to make is the question of the level at which this kind of environmental assessment is done. Is there an assessment that is done at policy level? Or is there an assessment that is done at project-specific level? And in the case of greenhouse gas emissions and a greenhouse gas emissions constraint, at the policy level, at the integrated resource planning level, which is essentially the strategic and high-level policy level, that is where the negotiation and the discussion takes place on building an emissions constraint, and has already taken place at the IRP 2010 level, but now is taking place in the discussions around IRP, the new IRP discussion document. So from a greenhouse gas emissions perspective, the merits of doing an environmental assessment at the project level then becomes an additional level of environmental assessment, and from our perspective, that has been done at a policy level. One of the key issues, however, is from an infrastructure perspective, the climate change implications of or the vulnerability associated with infrastructure in a changing climate. So that would be related to development of infrastructure in an area that, for example, may be prone to flooding, or infrastructure that may be requiring excessive water within a changing climate. And it's in that context that we are having the discussions and formalizing and finalizing the protocol that Sabelo has spoken of. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Judy. Welcome, Minister. We have already received the apology, Minister, that you'll be arriving late. Members, is there any questions? Honorable Kaden and Honorable Mokler.
Thank you, Chair. My first question goes around water availability. I just wanted to know if that has been adequately addressed in any of these deliberations, because I think that is a very important point when one measures the concerns of the community and the tension that could create with farmers and surrounding and neighboring communities. Okay, that's number one. The second one is, what lessons have the department learned from this? Because this lawsuit, because these things come at a big cost. And while we're on cost, if someone could tell us what this has cost, because obviously the taxpayer ends up paying for it. And then the authorization, as it speaks, as it stands, is it suspended? If someone could tell us that, is it suspended? And then the last question I have is, the minister conceded that material impacts were not assessed before the approval was granted. Is this an admission? The admission which would be contrary to the requirements of NEMA. Those are my questions, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Mokko there.
Thanks, sir. I have the one question that I had links with that which Honourable Padam asked. Whether, just in simple terms, what's the agreement? Is it that there be commencement with whatever construction and the assessment, comprehensive assessment of the climate change will be done post construction, just in clear terms. But also the full implications of that, what will that be when you assess afterwards? Can the operation be altered? And what would be the challenge in that regard? Because it may not be easy. The third point will be that obviously this does set a particular precedent. It was not there before. And hence the admission that all projects that are coming will have to take into consideration climate change impact. My other suspicion is that we may as well be challenged on the basis of the air quality consideration. We have entered another phase in the implementation of our projects in the country, given these particular areas that we consider. Now, is the department proactive in that regard, so that we don't move from time to time, even to go to courts to direct us what to do, so that we are ourselves able to foresee some of these issues and sort of come up with measures long before we are challenged to avoid costs associated with all of these when we get challenged in the court of law. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Abilu? Welcome back, Honorable Mabini.
No, thanks, Chair.
I've been missing you for some time.
Thanks, I'm back. Thanks, Chair. Just one question on page 4, the second bullet. Page 4, summary of the case. I know we cannot get into the merits and the demerits of the case and so forth. But for me, I just want to understand what you attribute bullet number 2. Is it a matter of the team that was working, who's doing the EIA, It is a matter of misunderstanding, misinterpreting section 240.1, or was it a lapse of memory, or a gap? What do you articulate, what do you attribute that kind of aspect to, so that we must understand that in future, those who are approving the environmental impact assessment or doing that must be rigorous, must be meticulous, must be systematic. What do you attribute to? Obviously, you'll have to look into why you are led to this interpretation, because according to the law, this is just plain reading, plain reading. And so we are found wanting. So what do you attribute to that, so that in future, these lapses or these gaps are not repeated? That's my simple question. Thanks. Thanks very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay. now, the stakeholders and the commentators who are working in this space have sort of hailed this as the first climate change ruling in the South African court ever since we made our commitment to reduce the emissions, the greenhouse gas emissions. And I just want to find out, I know that this Thabametsi is one of the couple, I don't know whether it's three or how many, the coal-powered sort of independent power producers that government intends to approve. Now, my question is, what is the cumulative impact in terms of the greenhouse gas emission that these power stations are going to have, considering our obligation towards the Paris Agreement and our strategy that we have developed in the nationalist payment contributions of peak, plateau and decline? What impact is this going to have? When you consider the area where Thabametsi is supposed to be, there is two other power stations there. There's Medupi and there's another one. What's the other one? Matimba. So what would have been the contribution? Has it been assessed as part of the EIA, the contribution that this mine was going to have on the air quality in the area in terms of the minimum emission standards? Is it not that the additional emission that this was going to bring, was it not going to lead to a situation where the minimum emission standards in the area are going to be exceeded? Those are my question. Maybe I must also just mention, we've got a climate change response policy framework, and 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, or last week, we briefed on the climate change legislative framework, which we have consistently argued that we require a climate change legislation so that the emissions allowed by the industry are legislated. They are not part of the framework. that we begin to start to have a situation where industry is obligated to reduce the emissions. Now, I just want to check the relationship between those discussions and this case as well, particularly the inclusion of the coal-powered power station. It's only Tabamisi now, but we know that there are others as well who has been agreed that they might come into the fold. I don't know who's going to respond to that. There are legal issues and there are other issues as well. So, do you want to direct the minister?
Thank you very much. I've just arrived from Johannesburg. I had late night meetings yesterday. It always happens on Monday. My apologies if I more often than not arrive on Tuesday morning because I have to leave Johannesburg early. I would like to respond to these issues that have been raised regarding Tabamisi, and also broadly outline where we are and where we are going as South Africa, in as far as the matters of environmental impact assessment are concerned, and also linking up with our NDCs, linking with our climate change response policies, linking with our IRP, Integrated Resource Plan. The first thing I would like to say, Chair, is that this is actually a matter that is being discussed. It's an outcome of a court where there is a judgment, which cannot reverse even at this level or even at my level until it is appealed or otherwise. Now, a judgment of a court came as a result of an appeal that was responded to and a granting of a go-ahead or a decision on an appeal. And a decision on an appeal is made in this particular case by the Minister of Environmental Affairs. So this matter has actually gone out of the officials at the department, at that level. It is now at the level of minister. And hence I am here to answer as broad as I can, as eloquent as I can, and as informative as I can. Meaning that this is actually a matter that's in my hands, even though there has been advice from the legal team. The legal team is a legal team consisting of a man and people who are sitting here in front of me. But they just advise and I make a decision. I have made a decision. And I believe the decision that I have made is the best decision that I have made and that I could make under the circumstances. It's an executive decision that is made after assessing all other things that are before us. I'm repeating, it's an executive decision that has been made having assessed all instruments and every information that is before us. Meaning that I'm starting with a question asked by Honorable Kuda. That was the water issue assessed. Has been assessed. And that assessment happens at a level where the EIA gets done, right? Not even at an appeal stage. Meaning that what we are discussing here, if you are to ask that question, it would have been asked at a stage earlier before this. When it came to me, by the time it came to me, part of the assessment carried everything else that's an assessment that accepts the impact of climate change. So all those other things, and including other things that we're going to ask if they are assessed, they were indeed assessed, pollution and so forth and so forth. But I would like to just, Chair, start by reacting to just clarifying where we are as South Africa. You see, when we were negotiating the climate change agreement that was finally agreed to in Paris, and please pardon me because I've got to start there. When we were negotiating that climate change agreement, every developing country, how many are we, 139? 139 countries of the world had this to say. We will agree to acting on climate change and taking actions on climate change, ensuring that we are responsible citizens of the world who act as developing countries that did not pollute and bring the world to the stage where we are right now. The developed countries who have polluted must lead in the climate change impact, I mean action. That's what it says. And that's what every country continues to say, including South Africa, every developing country. Because the pre-industrialization period is a period where every, the Germany, the whatever, all these developed countries have the opportunity to grow their economy, to do all sorts of actions in their industrialization processes. They were not told by anybody at the time that stop development because climate change impact is coming. Now is the time when the nations of the world are talking about climate change. We are now in our development spaces. And we continue to say that none of the developed countries should find themselves or hear themselves saying, you, the developing countries, must go kahle, go slow in your development, because they had an opportunity, ample opportunity to develop. We argue in other ways for our development space. And that's the spirit that I would like us to plant in this portfolio committee here today, if we haven't. The spirit is that we need our development space, all of us 139 countries of the world. And that development space we need in this manner. We said, we didn't say that we would not have a tabernacle. We said, by the way, let me also say that, by the way, Chair, the question you're asking about the nationally determined, is it, yeah, Chairperson, the nationally determined contributions, because the stations where Thabamezi is, the coal power stations where Thabamezi is, there are other stations there. Thabamezi was already in the nationally determined contributions of this country when we submitted them. It was assessed, it was part of what we had even when we submitted our own NDC. Secondly, linked to that question, because I'm going to keep answering questions as I do this long elaboration, of where, why we are arguing for our development space. Secondly, the pollution of Malawi and Botswana, for instance, is not the same as pollution of South Africa. There are developing countries that are emitting very, very less, but pollution does move. Yes, greenhouse gas emissions do move from Germany to the sky and impact on South Africa when it's here, in Malawi and in South Africa when it's here. In other words, I'm saying what is a congestion of stations there may impact and will impact in Malawi of when people in Malawi without being counted as a contestant in a particular area. What am I saying there? I'm saying the collectively the world argues that whichever any one of us produces as greenhouse gas emissions does in a large to a large extent have an impact elsewhere to anybody. So it's not a given always that we count the stations in a particular location and therefore say this is it, because there are too many here. Therefore, we can't therefore develop others there. We count these in our own whole holistic nationally determined contributions, where, by the way, Tabamete was already assessed at the time. It was part of that. What did we say when we argued in our developmental projection? Space. We said, in the climate change response policy, we are a developing country, we shall develop our industries, we shall continue to use coal, we shall use all other methods of energy in the country within our development space. And there are industries that we are going to be targeting and work within these industries and with these industries to gradually, not haphazardly as we are told by the developed countries. So the language that we speak here must be of a developing country, not of a developed country. We are going to move with the developing countries with the speed that South Africa would have determined, but within our own responsibility of being a good citizen of reducing the carbon emissions. We said, for instance, you, energy department or sector, you are emitting in the country, in the South African context, by so much. You transport, you are emitting by so much. Trade and industry, agriculture, you name them, all those industries. Having looked at them, we said we will work with you in the climate change response policy as we are all responding per sector. You energy, you are the highest emitter. You transport, you are the... We shall put in transport modes and mechanisms in place. We shall retrofit, we shall put mechanisms and new technologies in the energy space, renewables and so forth, by a particular period. We haven't said in 19, what is this year? In 2017 we shall be done. There's no such a thing. So, the trajectory is still going on. We acknowledge that there are some of the industries, for instance, in the climate change, we say the cement industry, those that will be resistant to any change, where there are going to be job losses anyway. And as we do all these things, we shall also be going to reskill and skill our people towards new technologies. Because you may close a power plant of coal today, five of them, and have what we saw happening. People joining saying, we were working here, where do we work? We've got to reskill them over time as a responsible citizen and as a developing country. Reskill them towards alternative energy, new technologies, new innovations, and so forth and so forth. So this is the bigger picture in the climate change response policy. I'm summarizing it. But there's also adaptation element in the climate change response policy. Now I'm moving to the IIRP, Integrated Resource Plan. Again, we responded in the same manner because these two sectors are working together. Our sector, as we are doing IRP through energy and all other relevant people in the sector, we are working together to respond to this climate change. We said to them, but as a collective, that we are now going to be moving, submitting our NDC. At the time it was INDC, Intended Nationally Determined Contributions. Now the I has fallen off. We shall work together. And by the way, every industry, we are surprised if some people are coming back today to say they were never there. They wake up that they don't know where this IRP comes from. They were there in those meetings, even everywhere. Eskom and them, all of them. When we said as a country, we had a dialogue first year at home and agreed about where we are going and how much do we put as carbon emission reduction that we'll be able to afford as a country. In which sector? Let me repeat, Tabamete was part of this particular program. It was in the INTC. It is still in the NTC. Now, this work that we are doing means that we all have to move together at the same time. Our objective in the IRP is that we will peak, plateau, and decline. This is an important point, honorable members. Peak, plateau, and decline. The peaking part of it is happening still now. We are not yet at a plateauing, meaning that we argue our developmental phase and say with our responsibility and within our responsibility as a responsible citizen, what is it that we must do? What actions must we take that will make us cut carbon emissions, reduce them, but at the same time not be in a problematic situation where we have job losses, where we have industry closures and so forth, because we need our industries to take us to where the developed countries are. What is it that we must do? We have calculated those efforts. And in that we said it's 915,000, what, tons? The tons that we, the trajectory that we stay within. Between 398 and 614. Between 398 and 614 megatons. That is the emission space that we still allow ourselves to actually emit whilst declining. So anyone who now expects South Africa that there must not be a Tabamesi, there must not be any other issue, is not quite fair for now, because we have said, let's decline a bit. We are going to be through, and this is the reason why we even said, let's even calculate through the using the pollution standards, the amount that which we are actually holding industries responsible to. We are doing right now what is called carbon budgets. Each one of the industries is going to be allocated carbon as a budget, that which you have to reduce your amount of emissions with as we go on. So they have those. We shouldn't say South Africa has ever said that it is today. So as we go on, we work with them and give them a particular space for them to be able to retrofit, to find their feet, but not what industry must never tell us which you are going to fight about and for, honorable members, including you must fight with them, is when any one of them tell us, go to the nearest whatever, we will not do it. That we will fight. But if they act within the carbon budget that we agree upon, we have agreed upon, and they move on, as long as they show that by the time we want to be there, when we begin to plateau, we shall be at a place where we can plateau. By the time when we are there to begin to decline generally and overall, in our emissions reduction standards, then these are calculated scientifically. It's 398 and 614 right now. When we come to plateauing, there'll be another bracket and another, in fact there are those brackets as well within which we move. And Tabamesi is in that bracket. Let's come back to that. I thought I should clarify this thing, because it does sound like sometimes we are saying, South Africa, you should not even be doing coke. You should not even be doing Tabamesi. Let me also say another element is this one. We are going to be continue to be grow in terms of the existing and the current IRP. There is an amount of 42% is 42% of renewables that we are building. Yeah, 42% of renewables that we are building till in 2030, and coal will still be there, but with a percentage. Gas will be there with a percentage. Whatever kind of gas that's there, nuclear would be there with whatever amount of gas. So the contributions, all of them from all these energy sources, will give us this 100% amount that we need. That's what we said as a country. So that's the trajectory that we're moving in. We are doing impact assessments now. The impact assessment as per the accord outcome, by the way, which we accept, that there has been that judgment. How we deal with that judgment, Chair, is a space that we need and I need to be allocated to stay within that space and respond in a meticulous manner within the executive power that we have and work with within that court issue. Because I think that what we are hearing here is that indirectly you were not supposed to be having this particular coal power station. That's what indirectly this has been said. I don't know whether it's fair. Maybe it's not fair, but ours is not a very peripheral interest that we have. Ours as an interest in the department is of mature people who must lead this country. And in leading the country, we are not going to quibble over small things. In not quibbling with small things, we are then going to be saying, what is the next step that we must take? Because what we want is a carbon emission reduction, nothing else. No quibbling over small things about who said what, who has won the first round or the second round. We are not in rounds here. We are not in a tournament team. We are in governing this country. So the tournament will end. The people of tournaments will stay there. We will continue to govern. In our governing, we will then say, what is it that we can put as minimal guidelines? Remember, there is no law now. We are now going to create a sub-law from a law that doesn't exist. A guideline is a sub-law from a law that doesn't exist. How people will actually comply to that is another story. If I am people who are in that space, I could say, but why are you just giving me a guideline? I can ignore. Remember, it's not a law. Guideline is a guideline. But we are going to move to that direction and at least ensure that within the space that we can ensure, to an extent that we can actually be sure that there's no continuous runaway of the carbon emission reduction. We have them on our radar screen. We understand what's developing, what's not developing in every space of development and facilities that are being built in our country, in as far as that's concerned. We want to have them on our radar screen. To an extent that we want to do that, we will do this guideline. That will allow now anybody who is doing a development. It's a new thing. It's a new thing that we'll be doing, but we're also doing it because we don't want to quibble with the court. We could go to and quibble with the court and ask them that please show us a piece of legislation on which we should actually do this. It's not there. I'm coming to your issue, Chair, of the piece of legislation. When we work on a new greenfield matter like this one, even before the carbon emission reduction is in place, even the national determined contributions. Remember, the national determined contributions, colleagues and honorable members, don't forget that they are actually going to be implemented from the year 2021. It's post-2020. They are not under implementation now. Let's also not forget that. Right now, we are at the space of voluntary contribution. Every country, not South Africa alone, is implementing voluntary contributions. So in 2021, only then do we start. What we are aiming at is to have our legislation built, and we could not just build a legislation when we had so many things to do and find space to build a legislation with no framework, with nothing. We had to do lessons. We had to learn from our IMDCs. We had to learn and consult and do whatever. This is a consultation that we're doing. So it shouldn't sound again that this department is just going there in 120 Mark Street and in Pretoria in the new building and sitting there. Because we are not just sitting. We are working hard on these things, synchronizing them because we are governing. So as we synchronize them, this is why we came with a framework of this legislation. I was saying to colleagues that please don't go outside and even to the stakeholders and start consulting even before ourselves have an agreement internal of what kind of legislation do we want. Or even, by the way, do we need a separate legislation or should we hinge this on any of the pieces of legislation that we have? That decision we still have to make. We have not yet made it. It can be that we actually don't even need to write an elaborate one. But we hinge this one, then we draw the guidelines and the regulations from that, which is going to be the easier and faster movement. So this framework is being worked upon. We are not sitting on our laurels. We are working. Have all the projects that we have done, looked at being... We're under the consideration, all of them, Honorable Kuvela. Yes, all of them. As I say, most of these projects you'll find that they are in the NDC. Some will, may not be, but whatever project that we are, so let me just give you an example of what we are doing here, amongst others. just to have our eyes on the radar screen. We have something that's called SKA in this country, you recall. The area of SKA is a square kilometer array. Where square kilometer array is being implemented in the Northern Cape and in part of Free State, if we put any other energy development, windmills, solar, and so forth, all those panels, in that space, and many of them, they may tamper with the satellites that are going to be put there. Because we know that scientifically, if there are many, they will tamper. We still don't know the extent to which they will tamper. At my level where I make a decision on any application, remember the applications of EIA are being done right now on alternative energy in that area, in that whole SKA area. What do I say at this point in time? Oh, scientifically speaking, we need to assess what amount of these windmills or how many of them or any kind of energy, whether it's solar or it's whatever, is likely to impact on this thing. We can't stump-suck it. We have to do it scientifically. So I'm just giving you an example of where we are actually becoming even proactive, where there are sensitivities already. We have already, as a country here, by the way, something that we didn't bring here, what we are supposed to be discussing, is energy corridors that we have assessed. We have dealt with the energy corridors and determined already the EIA did the broad impact assessments on point A to point B with length from Northern Cape up to leading up to Pretoria, up to Western Cape, up to Eastern Cape, and so forth and so forth. Determined on this particular space, because we have already preliminarily broadly assessed it. What is this preliminary assessment? Strategic environment assessment. Proactively, these are the areas that where we think people who are doing alternative energies, the windmills and the can come safely here and do these developments. Here you are not going to necessarily need a very in-depth EIA because we have already done that work for it. We are doing it in the area of shale gas right now. We've been there for 2 full years working flat out doing these assessments. So yes, indeed, those proactive actions are being taken on very many other strategic areas, including in Limpopo, where we are expecting developments in Matimba areas and Rustenburg areas as well, where there are infrastructure developments. Is there an admission? I've already started by saying that it is me, and I made the decision, executive decision, that I believe is reasonable and at the level at which it is. Of course, when you work, we sometimes get taken to court, cases get judged against us, sometimes cases get judged against those people who are taking you to court. That's why I said we are not in an autonomous match. Otherwise, we could sit here and say, no, we have won against them so many, and so forth. Some cases will be won, some cases will not be won. If they get won, it is within the scope of work that you do, within the budget that has been allocated by yourself through Treasury, through yourself here to do this work. That's why there will be a legal cost function, what is this thing, a budget, on our line item. It's not that we must be deliberately using it wrongly, but we use it for right cases like this one. And you will find that budget there will continue to use it for other cases of similar nature, especially where people take us to court when we don't even understand why. We will not relent and sit back, but we will continue to present to protect the state and protect the people of South Africa and protect our decisions, which I believe are made genuinely and from a point of view of the very valuable information that we have in front of us. What is the cost? I think it will be shared as part of the budget process. Yeah. So, Chair, as I summarize, we are working on legislation. We shall do that legislation, having informed, but it may be legislation that we find faster way of linking with NEMA, existing NEMA, and do maybe a chapter of NEMA or even regulations out of NEMA. One paragraph and do the regulation faster. It may be legislation that is on its own, it's going to take long time, once, as we have started right now. Knowing South Africans, knowing that our constitution says there must be public-private participation, it is ingenious, it's embodied in our constitution, we've got to go through these things. It's better to start at a higher end when you do this particular issue. Which question didn't I try to answer? Thank you.
No, thanks. The question that was not answered was the one that I posed. It has to deal with hindsight and assessment to see what can be attributed to where we are. I was asking it in the context of this kind of I don't want to say mistake, not being repeated, but I think I have seen you have noted it. Maybe the minister could have mustered.
I have answered it. I did say that what comes out in assessing what is the way forward in what needs to be done will obviously factor all these what needs to be done, not focus on where we come from, but focus on where we are going. That's what I'm prepared to do, and that's my answer to
your answer. Okay. All right. Those are the answers, colleagues. I must say, I sense that it does appear from the answers from the minister that there's some level of irritation by the questions that you're asking. I sense that repeatedly when the minister was responding that it seems as if we are asking questions that we are not supposed to be asking. And therefore the minister gets irritated. Because, you know, I allow the minister to conclude, but I must say, minister, there is a better language that you can use to engage with the committee. If language like we are governing this country, we are not sitting in our offices doing nothing. I sense some emotion in that engagement. And I don't think that should be how the minister should engage with the committee of parliament. I think there must be a much more matured way of engaging. Because this committee will ask questions, want to understand, and we expect that the department, the minister, the executive must respond to those questions without wanting to second guess why we are asking the question. Because it is our responsibility to ask questions. And the executive has got a responsibility to answer the question. There is a judgment that has been issued which has been said to be a groundbreaking judgment on climate change. The Committee of Parliament is requesting to be briefed on this judgment. I don't think it's necessary for anyone to be emotional because these are not personal matters, these are issues in all our spaces. The executive has taken a decision, it has been reversed by the court. The committee is asking, please brief us on this. And my sense was that up to so far we were engaging properly until the emotional response. So I don't think, I'll plead to Minister that the minister should not be irritated by the questions that the committee has asked. Because there's a sense that I was thinking. the department is not appealing the judgment. The department is accepting that they will take a judgment. My apologies, sir. The department is seen to be accepting the judgment, and in response, there is a view that there's, in terms of the presentation, the department is developing a climate change protocol to guide any future authorization. So that, for me, is a correct and positive response to the judgment of the High Court. Because we should not suggest that we don't respect what the court has pronounced on. If we respect what the court has pronounced on, let's follow it up. Let's comprehensively embrace and deal with what the court has decided. And let's not cast suspicion on anything that we have decided by the court. So we take it that the climate change protocol is a proper response which seeks to respond to what the court is saying in terms of, the court says that the department must consider climate change implications before the department or the minister issue of authorization. And for that to be complied with, there is a protocol that the department is seeking to develop, which we do accept, and I think we welcome that. So I just thought that I must say that without having to go into other things that were said, to say let's engage properly, let's engage as honorable members here. Let's not be emotional, because these things are not personal. They are not our own issues. We have got a responsibility as Parliament to ask questions. So it shouldn't be that when you are asking questions, people are getting irritated. That's not how we should engage. I'm going to give you an opportunity. Let me give Honorable Kevin.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the opportunity. In clear, concise language, can we be told, is this authorization suspended as we speak, pending the actions to be taken by the department? And have operations at the Tabamechi been put on hold? Simple, clear answer. The other one, we were told in depth about the budget for legalities, but I asked for specific costs. Are there specific costs to this court case available or not? Thanks, Chair.
Okay,
I'm going to give her Riyadh to answer this question from a legal point of view, but what I know is that the judgment is cannot suspended, and it's not suspended, so the position. If you would let him answer.
The judgment does not suspend the position.
We will answer, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Minister. The judgment suspends one condition of the Minister's decision. So the condition of the Minister's decision, which requested a climate change impact assessment to be conducted post-authorization, has been suspended. By implication, the project cannot proceed until the climate change impact assessment has been submitted to the minister, which it will be done within the next month, and the minister has then considered that assessment and remade her decision. So up until the minister has remade a decision in compliance with the court's instruction, the authorization is suspended. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay, in summary, what is the answer? or maybe I must ask, is there an intention to appeal this judgment?
Chair, this is why I was a bit nervous when you, he asked the ruling at this corner, when you say that we have accepted that it is, yes, we accept the judgment. We are actually looking at all other possibilities, including when the submission has been made about this suspension. This case, much as it is raised by other people as the groundbreaking and whatever, may have implications on many other things, which we are still going to consider from a legal point of view, based on what our decisions are, on all that analytical work that we have to do. A possibility of a domino effect on many other decisions, and what then do we do? So we are at that point right now where we have to consider all this. Yeah? So we'll still come back about what the final decision is, having looked at the possible domino effect and repercussions of this case.
Okay. The cost, you have a final tally on that? Or is something that you think you need to go and look at it and come back?
I did say, Chair, that we submit on cost of legal costs on many other things, including this one will do. Unless it is the want us to do it now.
It's not yet costed.
Yes, but then we should come with all others as well. Okay. Of this nature.
Mm. Okay, there is no cost in as far as that is concerned. The department will bring the issue of cost as well as normally what happens after the case, everybody else sends their statement and then you then develop a complete summary of the cost. You have got the advocate, you have got the attorney, so they send the bill, and that's where you determine the cost of the case. And if the court says that you must pay the other party, then also gets determined. But so we understand that if that has not happened, fine. But if the minister requires that you. The department submit all the costs, because I understand the question to be on this specific one, not on the overall. If you want to submit for the overall, I'm sure you can also do that, but that was not the request. But if you want to do it, I think you can also do that. If you want to submit all the costs of all the cases, the department is involved. Okay, Honorable Makure. Oh, okay. No, you're too considered because I saw your hand. But anyway, I guess the questions have been answered.
I'm on your hands.
On which one? Okay.
We all these members who are here from the department have got strict instructions to adhere to the portfolio committees. Requests, answers, questions, and so forth. And I do the same too. In fact, even before you came here as a chair, that everyone already would remember that I consider myself as a member of this committee, not a chair, but that group in particular. When chair, we speak to each other, it must be both ways. When you hear statements that says, if you do not want to do this legislation, we will do it, that's got a meaning. And unfortunately, we are elder people. We understand what that means. That's why I'm saying we are not seated. We are working hard on the legislation. Because those words have come from this committee. So I'm reacting to words that have come from this committee, and I'm reacting to them in respect and with respect. So when we respect each other, we shall respect each other. When there's a reaction that comes, I've already been told by other honorable members here, Chair, by the way, that, oh, we have a hot chair, she will handle her. Yes.
From
that other side. So I'm being handled, they know. And what you know is that I will not stop not at responding when I'm angry.
No,
yes.
That's a very serious.
It is serious, even for me. That's why I asked for a meeting between me and you.
That's a very serious statement to say that. I don't know whether you want to put that as a form record, Minister, because that's a very serious allegation. Because we may want to find out who said that.
It is on record.
It is on record. I don't say things that I will not vouch for.
Okay. Alright, let me just summarize. I think the last submission, Minister, is very unfortunate because when you allege, you must say who said what. Not just a wild allegation, because there's no intention from our side. There's no intention from our side, Minister, to do anything else that we are not supposed to be doing. So anything that we do here, we are doing it consistent with our responsibility to do oversight. So if oversight work that we are doing is not how it's expected, unfortunately, we've got a forum where we can go and discuss. But I think it's very unfortunate that this kind of statement are made here. It bedevils the environment and it's not right. This committee, Minister, I repeat, this committee's work is to do oversight over the department. And it will continue to do that. No amount of threats are going to derail us from doing that. So I just want to repeat that this is what we are going to do. And we are not doing maliciously. We are doing it in line with what we are supposed and expected to do. And it will continue to be like this. We are never going to be intimidated not to do our work. But the Minister, you can't do it like this. You can't behave like this when you're appearing in front of the committee. Just wait a minute and I'm not going to.
Chair, can I say something,
please? Can we stop?
No.
Because what you are really continuing to do is to just continue with things that I said we need a corner to discuss.
Yes, but
please, if you repeat it, this is a public meeting. I do not want to be insulted in public spiritual.
Can we have order?
But who is insulting the minister? Who's insulting the minister here? Because we're speaking here and the minister keeps on making comments. This is not how you're expected to behave in a committee of parliament, Minister, please. You have been a member of parliament for many years and you know it. So you can't behave like this. Please. We're doing our work here of oversight. We're expected to do this work. And you're supposed to be exemplary, Minister, to this team that you're leading. So we're going to leave it at this, honorable members. I'm not going to allow a discussion on this. That's how we wrap it up. We've received a briefing from the department. We will still get some other information about some of the things that have been requested. The department will also look as to whether they look at the case, whether appeal or not appeal. If the department does not appeal, they will comply with the court action. So that's how we leave it. Honorable members. Thank you very much.
responses to the questions. Can we get SOS to come and brief us? Maybe we must get a 10-minute brief. Okay, we'll be back at... at 5:11.
Which Okay, I'll be back. Alright. We are supposed to be receiving a briefing on the second and third quarter performance reports of SARS. The leadership of SARS is the chair of the board. You're welcome.
Thank you.
I was introduced to the CEO, but I told the minister we would do the honors and introduce properly. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We are very appreciative to be here with South African Weather Services today. And right from the onset, Chair, I know that you have been introduced to the new CEO, but I thought that on record we should do it as well from our side. We have with us here today the Jerry Lumwasa. The Jerry Lumwasa has been, if I may, with us in the South African Weather Services for quite a while before. He was sent abroad to do the same work on behalf of South Africa. So he has worked in the soil and led the organization before. A scientist by profession in that particular space who has been doing this work and leading the team very well, a good manager. So for a while I'm really just frustrated. I'm sure you'll get to see his CV as time goes on. But for a while he was working from Geneva, Switzerland, where the WMO, World Meteorology Organization, is based as a deputy executive secretary of that organization. We would have wanted to have him at South Africa because he was our candidate some 2 years ago, to have him as the executive secretary of the same organization, given his capabilities. But as you know, there's a lot of lobbying and jogging that happens in this particular position. So, fortunately or unfortunately for us, unfortunately, but fortunately for all of us, again, and in the world, a new person has now been attained that position. So he is now back home to serve, and in fact he came back home after he applied for this position, and then it was evident that he was going to be appointed. So he is here, and there's not been any short circuiting of everything, but he's been here for a year at home. So when he applied, in fact here he was already here at home, so we thought we should appoint him amongst many other candidates who are were interviewed and came out being the best student amongst the best who had actually applied. So he is now with us back, and we hope that he will help us to take this organization forward. Assisting the chair hand in hand, who is on her second term as well as a board member, and the entire board. Thank you so much. And he will be very much willing to work, eager and willing and determined to work with the portfolio committee as he has always done. But back then under the leadership of Dr. Martinez, and did you work with Soji Kaiser? No, just Martinez. Thank you very much.
Oh, you want to see all before?
Mm.
All right, that's good. Okay. Chair of the board, do you want to make comments, or you are the CEO? I don't know whether the CEO, the new CEO, I see the document was being prepared under interim CEO. So you tell us who is going to take us through that.
Thank you, Chair. The new CEO just started a few days back. So for this presentation, we will continue. It will be presented by Ms. Mapula Khara.
Okay, madam. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members, honorable minister and colleagues. Good morning once more. Chair, we will be doing the quarter three performance because quarter two was already done in the previous meeting, so it's more just a summary of a recap of what we have previously presented. The detailed presentation will have an overview on the AGQ3 dashboard and the performance of the governance environment is still as it was in quarter two, with main performance areas particularly on the internal control drivers that focus on leadership and governance, which were the status quo still very much maintained to ensure that we have strengthened that environment. The challenging area where we had quite weak control, was mainly around the IT systems and particularly on the availability and accuracy of the weather data, but also the protection of information. And what we have done there is to strengthen that environment, we had appointed a strategic advisor at the end of quarter three to ensure that we tighten all those controls in that environment. Looking at the summary of the previous presentation, I think this is just the slide on the legions in explanation of what the color coding means on the targets. Obviously the green bar meaning that we have achieved the target, the amber one looking at the partially achieved targets for the quarter, and the red ones obviously looking at those that are not achieved. The blue ones is targets which did not participate for that particular quarter, and the brownish one obviously looking at information that was not provided. We did not have anything that was not provided for in Q3. An overall summary in comparison of where we ended quarter two, and if you look at quarter two performance, we ended that quarter with 83% achievement of the target, and 3% of those targets were still in progress, so they were not they were partially achieved, and 4 of those targets were not achieved, which represented 14%. 2 of the targets did not participate for that particular quarter, and that was mainly around the absorption of the buzzeries and also the stakeholder satisfaction survey, which normally takes place in Q4. So those did not participate, and we only had 4 targets which were underachieved. If you look at quarter three, the performance declined severely, particularly on the ones that were achieved. Out of the 30 targets that participated in that quarter, 21 were achieved, which represented 70%. Which was a little bit lower than in comparison to quarter two, and 10% of those, which is 3 out of the 30 that participated in that quarter, was partially achieved or work was still in progress in it, and then mainly 6 targets were not achieved, and these covered mainly the SE study that was not conducted in quarter three, and the availability of radar data. We have severe challenges, which I'll talk a little bit later on. The employee capability, particularly on the core and critical skills, also was not completed because there was a dependency on the organizational design program, which only was finalized at the end of quarter three, and the leadership competency index had not been completed. So both of those, the employee capability and leadership had dependency, particularly on the organizational design program, which was still underway and was only completed at the end of quarter three. The stakeholder satisfaction rating, as I have already spoken to it earlier on, it's normally undertaken in Q4. However, in Q3, normally it's sitting around work in progress, and we had already appointed a service provider at the time, but it was not achieved at the time because of delays and limited responses to the tender that had already gone out. The SEB study also was not appointed because it's only in second quarter that the board decided that the SEB study must be fast-tracked and brought into the target of the new financial year. The high-level organogram was still as is, Chair. In quarter three, we had four vacancies, that of the CEO at executive level and the GM corporate affairs, who left the organization at quarter three, and the two senior managers, one the HCD who contract left, and the ICT manager whose case was closed and he was dismissed in the organization. So we had four vacancies as at Q3. Now we have set ourselves five strategic goals for this current year, and goal one obviously being the provision of products and services, and the second one mainly focusing on service delivery, which is the capability and capacity development in the organization, mainly focusing on the infrastructure and human capital of the organization. And the third goal being leveraging the stakeholder engagement. The fourth one, looking at the heart and engine of what we do as an organization, which is to build the research, knowledge and intelligence capacity in support of us creating a weather smart nation. And the last one being sustainability and growth, which focuses on driving the revenues of the organization. So if we look at goal one, which had six targets in quarter three, Chair, the three targets were achieved and two were partially achieved and one was not achieved. The first one, which was not achieved under goal one, was the SE study, which was supposed to have been conducted by quarter three, but because of the late appointment of the service provider, but also the revision of the sample of the provinces that we wanted to conduct the study in was reviewed. It was delayed, and in December, this is when the appointment was made, and the study only was undertaken in Q4. However, it was completed. It was done in four provinces, Limpopo, KZN, Eastern Cape, and Free State. So that was concluded. However, in quarter three, that work was still underway and it was running quite behind. The partially achieved target, one of them was in Q3, we should have launched a product, and the four that we had produced in the previous year, which was the it was maintained and still taken to market. However, there was a new product that was expected to be launched. We completed the CRS, which is the community rainfall station, and it was supposed to have been launched in December. We wanted to piggyback on the great severe weather events that was happening around November with the tornadoes and the flash floods that happened in November. However, that couldn't be done, but then we targeted the fourth quarter, which was to be celebrated on the 23rd of March 2017. The sector-specific products in quarter three, we did achieve that target, and energy sector-specific products was developed, which was a solar resource assessment report, which is currently being now finalized for to go to market as we have started the new fiscal. And then the next one that was partially achieved was the completion of the agricultural sector marketing plan. We had a draft format in Q3 because we were still awaiting the input. We're still holding focus groups with the agro sector market, and most of the agricultural sector forums inputs were still being refined and included into the marketing plan, so that we are able to understand the needs and come up with product development for that sector. So the inputs were delayed, and we only received them towards the end of quarter three. So that was partially achieved, and those were included. On the implementation of annual milestone, as you remember, Chair, last year we launched the Agro Hydro product, which was the HydroNet platform, which was shared with Parliament. We then started implementing that marketing plan, and because of the severe weather events, particularly the El Nino season, that enabled us to take that product to market. 82% of the milestone of that marketing plan was achieved. We had budgeted that we will make about 1.7 million out of that marketing plan, but by quarter three we were already 82%, which was much far ahead of what we had targeted for quarter three. And there is still a number of agro sector, like cotton in South Africa was very much engaged in quarter three, and the contract is at the final stages to be concluded. The last one on goal one was the number of strategic alliances that needed to be put in place. There was two engagements in quarter three which were still underway, and some of those were already in pilot phase with the general aviation sector market, some of the players there, which already the pilot phase had already produced the revenues in that, and in quarter three we're still very much on target on this particular one. If we look at goal two, we had nine targets.
Can you just focus on areas where you've not achieved? Yeah. Maybe just not achieved or partial.
Okay.
The red and the...
And the M.
Yeah. Then leave the rest.
Thank
you. It's fine, members. Just to save time.
Thanks, Chair. We'll do that. And then on strategic goal two, Chair, we had nine targets. Three were not achieved, and there was no action required. The one where action was not required, it was the one on the buzzeries, which were not expected, because the uptake of the buzzers or conversion of those who concluded their studies, the uptake only happens in January after they have written their last year exams. So that was not active. The three ones which were not achieved, the first one was the radar availability, Chair, which mainly was around the power failures and the communications problem, particularly in December when we had heavy storms, and an aggressive maintenance plan has been put in place with a supporting funding to enable all the radars to have backup electricity and UPS system, and also to repair those that had issues. The second one was on the capability assessment. Mainly it was reliant on the organizational design, and the organizational design's focus was mainly on creating the retention, the attraction of talent, and also development of scarce skills. So those, because we first needed to do an assessment of what the competencies were required within the scarce skill areas, so those that the outcomes were going to come out of the OD. On the leadership capability one, it was mainly because there was an assessment that was done on the leadership capability competencies, but with some of the vacancies that were created as well, we had to now reassess in line with the OD to say what would be the strategic competencies and leadership that would be required to take the new strategy that was only approved last year forward. So those two were mainly dependent, and the exercise was only concluded in quarter three. If we move on to goal three, Chair, we had three targets. One was partially achieved and one was not achieved. The partially achieved one was mainly on the engagement stakeholder programs. We had targeted to have two stakeholder engagement programs in quarter three. And as you would have noticed, Chair, the corporate affairs vacancies created a vacuum in terms of a resource, so we had to then get a resource that was going to conclude that. There was work in progress already in quarter three, but the two stakeholder groups were not concluded, and then we got an intervention there from the resources internally to finalize that. The next one was the stakeholder survey. This was taken out to market on a tender, and the service providers' responses were quite limited, and that caused a delay. The appointment was done only beginning of January, but it had missed the target in quarter three because we normally appoint the service provider who undertakes the study because it's massive, and that then gets done in quarter four. But in quarter three, we had not concluded that, but early January, this was then concluded. If we move to goal four, we had three targets, Chair, and one was not achieved. This was the social economic benefit study, as I've already alluded to earlier on. This is mainly to value the work that the source does so that we can be able to have a convincing business case when we require funding, particularly from the shareholder and parliament. And the board felt this was a key strategic exercise that needed to happen, and it was brought forward. So we finalized the terms of reference for the study in quarter three. However, we had not secured the funding, and the funding was only secured from the savings from savings that was done from the previous quarters to fund the first phase of this in quarter four. If we move to goal five, there were three targets, and which are these mainly revenue targets. And in all the three revenue streams that we do, all of them had achieved the targets in quarter three, Chair. Without wasting time, I will then move quickly to the source profile and employment equity for the quarter. We ended quarter two with 411 headcount. However, we grew a little bit in quarter three with a total of 438 employees in our booth. And the employee statistics on the next slide. The employee statistics on the next slide, the ones that did not perform well was the African, which the African employees. The target was that we would achieve 74%. However, at the end of quarter two, 1569, so about 74% down, and the colored race group, which was about 0.8 lower. I will then hand over to the acting CFO to handle the financial report.
Thank you. Good morning, honorable members. For the year to date, which ended on 31 December, the source financial position was actually very good. We achieved a net surplus of 7.6 million rand. And that was mainly due to total revenue, which was above budget by 10.4 million, amounting to 26 million. Our total expenditure for the year to date up to December was slightly below budget at about 4%. The the revenue is mainly made up of non-regulated income as well as regulated income, which is basically aviation, which is based on cost recovery. The aviation income, which is based on cost recovery, amounted to 101 million, which is slightly above budget by 19.2 million, while non-regulated commercial revenue amounted to 15.4, which was above revenue by 1.9 million. We also had other income from donor funds as well as interest income, which amounted to 2.3. The revenue from non-commercial revenue is mainly exceeded budget, mainly due to revenue that we received from Hydronet, which is a project that we have with Eskom by about 1.7 million. Then the other part of the revenue came from South African Air Quality Information System, which was above budget by 5.6 million. Those are projects that we have with the city of Tshwane as well as the municipality in Mpumalanga. In as far as total expenditure is concerned, we were slightly below a budget on compensation of employees, which was about 3.64 million below budget. Operational expenses were 4.3 million below total budget, and admin expenses 2.2 million below budget, which I'll explain in the next slide. The reason for admin expenses being below budget was mainly due to reversal of provision for bad debts. We previously had bad debts from SA Express, and they were owing us about 6.7 million. That has now since been paid back, and we have reversed that provision for doubtful debts. And there was also an amount of training of 1.8 million that was unspent at the time, that is the year to date in December. But there was about 1 million that was committed, which has since been spent as at year end. Under operating expenses, software licenses were 8.95 million. That software licenses, members, honorable members, to support us in terms of our infrastructure and when it comes to our data. So we've got a lot of those for our radars, LDMs, and automatic weather stations. Those are usually spent towards the end of the financial year. So there was an 8.95 million that was unspent at the 31 December, but that would have been spent at the end of the financial year. Consultancy fees amounted to 250,000. We had a budget of 3 million that was allocated, which is basically to assist us with the audit findings that were picked up by the Auditor General related to security issues, which by the end of the year that amount would have been reduced. Then as far as international travel, we had a 33% savings, which amounted to 1.3 million, which is below budget by 2 million. And the reason for this saving on international travel is mainly because we get funding from international sponsors to fund our international travel, which helps the organization a lot in terms of savings when it comes to traveling abroad, as we are aware of the current financial situation as far as the exchange rate is concerned, and trips overseas might cost a bit more, and augmented also by the fact that the price of fuel keeps on going up as well. And I would like to thank you.
Thank you very much. Any addition? No addition. Questions? Can I invite questions on our number? Honorable Sekan?
No, thanks very much, Chair. And happy Mother's Day, Minister, and all the women in the committee.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day. We celebrate it on Sunday.
It's continuing.
Okay. No, we did wish all the mothers happy Mother's Day on Sunday. But we must repeat it again. We are with you, Honorable Sekan.
What is source coverage in rural parts of South Africa in terms of severe weather warnings? And my other question, what percent of people have you reach in Northwest? And how did you do this? Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Edward, Honorable Peden.
Thanks, Jay. I think it's more a comment. It was a question originally, but I think you explained it nicely. Your target or the achievement of your target went a little bit down. But am I correct in understanding through what you've explained that even though 20% wasn't in the red, it you kind of caught up in quarter four. So then in other words, what I would like to ask now is that was there anyone that you didn't catch up with? And then I just want to ask something, maybe I missed it. On slide 7, it doesn't correlate with slide 3. The one where you explain quarter 2, quarter 3 underneath each other, and then the one I'm talking about is the pie chart.
Okay.
Different.
Okay. It was an error on me.
Hopefully they've got the question. Honorable Pena.
Thank you, sir. On the contracts with the Trani, and I don't know if I picked up clearly, somewhere in Mpumalanga.
Mm-hmm.
Are these contracts negotiated on an annual basis, or are they 3-year contracts? If someone could just explain to me.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I will come in the presentation. I've got only one question on page 25 on the top management that I want to know. Because it's only one African and all African beings, and one white. What about the colors, the Indian? There are no top management, thank you very much, or they don't have applications for them.
Yeah, I thought you were going to congratulate them on having 3 females, 1 male.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I'll do that.
I'm congratulating on the top management, but we need more, Chairperson.
Yeah, but these are not balanced.
Of equality.
Four against one.
Of equality.
Yeah. Okay. One more question.
I thought when women are more, it's not a problem. The problem is only when females are less. There are two questions. On slide 20, which is strategic goal 4, the one that is not achieved, I might admit it. It's like funds were not allocated for the project. If that reason is sustained or remains, does it mean that there's no funds for the project throughout the year? Meaning that we don't expect it to be achieved by quarter 4. And perhaps that once more to be refreshed on the reason why the project was there, no allocation. The last question on the finances. And I'm basing that on slide 8 and with the projection that by quarter 4 is so saying that everything financially is sound, that there's no challenges. We don't foresee any problem, or we're moving comfortably, that there's no questions in terms of either going to be spending more outside the budget or anything like that. Thanks.
Okay. All right, my
dear. No, thanks. On page 31, or in slide 31,
On the employee cost, I just want to check in terms of the ratio, personnel versus non-personnel. What is the actual ratio? That's the first question. In terms of the employee cost, I see there's a figure that you are putting there. Mm. And then the vacancies are still to be filled in the course of the year. Mm-hmm. Now the question arises for me, what is the ratio, personnel versus non-personnel? That's the first thing. Secondly, what is the turnaround time of filling the vacancies? I know it's an HR question. And then in terms of the critical vacancies, can we be given the disaggregate thereof? Then in terms of the cost drivers, you have mentioned three. Are there other cost drivers that source is dealing with over and above the three that you have mentioned? And then with regard to your total revenue above budget, which is 9.89 million, what happens to that? Is it recapitalized, or what happens to? It's a surplus, that's how you call it in inverted commas. Mm-hmm. What do you do with that surplus? So that we understand. And then lastly, in terms of your responsibility, as you clearly indicated, forewarning for South Africans in terms of severe weather warning. I just want to check over and above the current means of communication that you are using. Are there other new ventures that you are looking into, especially some of the apps and so forth? And then lastly, are there any impacts in terms of the foreign weather, work in relation to the apps that they are currently using? Is there any impact? So that one can follow the development. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you.
Yes, Chair. On the financial the financial report ending December page 11, 6.2. There were outstanding issues to be entertained with the suppliers. So, do you see that page?
Page 11.
Yeah.
9/11.
No. Not on the presentation, on the financial report.
Okay.
Ending December 2016. On page 11 of 14, 6.2.
Yeah.
You get it?
Yeah.
I'm just referring to source. There were those outstanding, there were queries and so on and so on. Just for interest, I think whether that has been resolved.
You have the question?
Yes.
I think some of the questions raised by Honorable Mazibu were also discussed in the last, what is the annual report? The APP.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the APP.
Mm-hmm.
But the Honorable Mazibu was not there.
Mm-hmm.
But you can just repeat for the sake some of the answers that you gave us. Yeah, who's Ms. Harry?
Thanks, Chair. With the team, we'll take alternatives in responding. But let me start with Honorable Edward's questions around the 20% that was behind. Yes, honourable member, most of the targets at quarter three that were not achieved, we then put a very aggressive recovery plan for them. And it is that I don't have my Q4 numbers, but we've made quite good progress, and we ended the year quite well with only three targets being missed, which was the radar and the dual carrier puffing, and the last one being what was the last one, but it was only the three. So those, we did make good progress, and we recovered well. The slide 7-1 on the pie chart. The pie chart for the Q3, there was a numeral error. That is why I didn't talk to it, and I stick to the numbers, which was summarized on slide 3, which was more on the table. So yeah, we apologize for that error. When you convert it to pie chart, it changed the numbers. And then the questions on Honorable Payton's question on how many contracts are they annual or 3 years. Honorable Payton, normally the municipalities will go out on tender, particularly around the air quality maintenance for their infrastructure, and we responded to those tenders, the Mpumalanga one and the 21. We are currently servicing their and maintaining their air quality stations and the automatic weather stations. We have contracts for 3 years set up, because they were issued out on a tender. So both of them, they are a 3-year tender, and there's good value for money. I think each one of them is comes at 5 million annually. So it was commercial tenders that we won, and we're currently servicing them. And then the question on strategic goal for Honorable Makubela on the SED study. As I've already said, the SED study was not scheduled for this current financial year. But the board at their strategic workshop that happened in July, which was second quarter of last year, felt that it was very important that management considers bringing the study ahead, because it was of strategic importance to the organization in understanding what is the value of the net service to the economy of South Africa. So we had not budgeted for it, but management was tasked to go and find where there were savings, or you know, with stretched targets on non-regulated revenue to accommodate the funding of the study. So it was almost first month of second quarter that we got this task to do, and we could not find funding, because it was still very early days of the financial year. We only managed to secure those funding from savings and also from revenues in end of quarter three. So the study was initiated then in beginning of January. So we did not, but however, this current financial year, it has been allocated funds, so it will be able to be concluded. The issue was just the initiation of phase one of the SEP study. And then the slide 25, the rate on top management. Ma'am, if you look at the high-level organogram of SOAS on page 3, you would notice that it's a very, very conservative structure, very small, and unfortunately the appointments, and at the time the filling of those posts, as the chair, honorable chair has already alluded to, was filled with three African ladies, one white female, and so we haven't really attracted, but we do have vacancies now. We'll try and be inclusive of other races.
Very
I don't know what that means.
I think for for the 1 meal who is there.
The acting CFO is closing the gap a little bit for now, so that he doesn't feel left out.
No, but I can understand, it starts in the department. Okay.
Okay. The other questions, I'm going to hand over to Mikeli to respond to Honorable Kekana's questions, both of them, the coverage and the reach in the Northwest, and the financial one for Honorable Madi, which touches mainly on the HR one, to the CFO to respond to.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members. Honorable Kekana, soft coverage on rural parts in South Africa in terms of the severe weather. The coverage is inclusive of all the rural areas. But your question is actually talking to whether these people, they get these warnings, and then if they get them, do they understand them? If they understand them, are they able to take appropriate action? So that's where we have a challenge currently, and we have responded to the call from the members, as we also presented when we're presenting APP. That is the area that we are looking at. We have just conducted a needs analysis. Another program that is going on now is with the small scale farmers. It's also going to conduct their need analysis, working with the Central University of Technology. What we are starting this financial year is to look at the end-to-end, what you call end-to-end dissemination system. Because the members previously, they also asked, do we know who has received our warning? And then do we also know what they have done with them? So we are trying to address that, working with the disaster management authorities. The National Disaster Management Center has agreed to be on board in working on that. Honorable member. So that is a gap that we know. So hence I cannot even tell you how many people have reached in the Northwest in terms of the severe weather warning. And then the other one, severe weather warnings, are there other ventures in terms of dissemination of information? Yes, I just mentioned now the end-to-end and also the small-scale farmers that we are targeting. And we are also looking at the applications. Social media, we have also moved a bit. We are careful when we are getting into the space of social media because you also want to make sure that there's no miscommunication of information, because miscommunication of information may lead to more disasters than they would if the information was not placed there. But we are reaching that space, and we are also getting feedback from the people. Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I'm missing it.
Okay. There's daily communication of the weather on because I'm on Twitter. I do follow up South African weather service. For each province there is that every day. At least on that score can confirm that there's information available. Maybe members must follow. I wonder how many members are on Twitter. Honorable Edward, no. No Facebook. Look. Honorable members, on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter is a good medium to provide a lot of information about what is happening, So members must be encouraged on social media. It's not something to be frowned upon. It's part of advancement of technology. The information superhighway, so you must get on Twitter so that you get information. Honorable Madi. must be on Twitter. Okay. That's sort of like hello there. CFO?
Thank you, Chair. The question with regards to the ratio of employee cost to non-employee cost is, as of 31 December, amounted to 56%, but our target is actually 60%. And the reason why we were sitting at 56% is because we had underspending in other areas, as I mentioned in my presentation. So as we start now to spend on those other areas, so that ratio should actually revert back to our target, which is 60%. Which will happen towards the end of the year. Okay, the next one on cost drivers, I mentioned two, that is correct. And one of our major cost drivers is infrastructure costs. And linked to infrastructure costs are repairs and maintenance, as well as software licenses, because these are the ones that are linked to, because our total value of our assets, the net value is about 400 million. So that's a very major cost of cost driver to the South African Weather Service. And as I've said, linked to that is repairs and maintenance, because the norm in the industry is that you have to spend at least 20% on maintenance based on your total asset base. So which means not even close to that. Our budget for repairs and maintenance for this past financial year was around 3 million rand, which also impacts on our data availability, as well as our other infrastructure in terms of data availability. And the next question was on total revenue in terms of surplus. What are we going to do with the surplus? Should we, at the end of the financial year, have a surplus, which we will most likely have? The process that needs to be followed in terms of the PSMA and the Schedule 3A schedule, we have to apply to National Treasury to obtain those surplus funds. Should that be granted, then the plan is to actually use those to assist the organization in terms of capital expenditure and also on repairs and maintenance, as I've mentioned, that we don't have enough budget in terms of spending for repairs and maintenance, as well as capital expenditure for our infrastructure. So that will be the process that will be followed. With regards to the question on page 11, item number 6.2, items that were outstanding in terms of creditor, we have resolved all the other items with the exception of the telecom item. That is still being followed up with ESCOM. We've got a lot of stations, and some of them we have closed the infrastructure, because the infrastructure is not working, but Telkom is still charging us data on those stations. Meanwhile, we have closed those particular numbers. We are working together with ICT in terms of resolving that. We're hoping to resolve that by the end of the financial year. And in terms of the first question, which was on challenges towards the end of the financial year, are we happy how service is being run financially in terms of fiscal prudence? Yes, I must say, definitely SOAS is in a very healthy position. As indicated in the financial statement, we've got a net surplus of 7.6 million. Expenses are under control. They are 3.98% below budget, which is in line at the end of December 2017. So we're not going to have end over expenditure. We've had challenges during the year in terms of the cost that we have spent, but we've also made sure that we reduce spending in other areas so that we can cater for areas where there is where there is overspending.
Just if we could as well be updated on the debtors who were taken to court and the issues were not resolved to them, either those airlines that are no longer flying, like SkyWise and them, or Air Namibia, which is from the insurance companies that are not willing to pay. I think you know about this. It's on the financials as well, on page 9. That's 5.2. If you could just update, we can just suppose we have 3.
Yeah. All right.
As far as the airlines that are not paying, such as Skywise, with interest delegation of authority, we need to get approval from actually the CEO as well as the board to ratify the actual right of those debts that have gone bad. However, in terms of accounting statements, we have to make a provision in our books. So that provision has been made for the debt for those bad debts that have not paid out. To make a provision that these debts are not going to be recoverable in the foreseeable future unless the details are changed. As far as insurance companies, the same applies as well. They don't want to pay us because they say they will know what the numbers, and some of these relate to about 5-10 years ago, and they don't want to pay because they say that there are no order numbers. And we also follow the same process. The process is that we make a provision. As soon as something that you foresee that is not going to be recovered, we make an impairment. That's an accounting provision. We make an impairment, and then we follow the process of writing off. Another question.
Ukraine is also there's not going to be a recovery also from Ukraine.
It is the same process that we follow. We have already made a provision for Blueprint to write it off, and it just requires now the final approval from executive management to actually write it off.
Okay.
I think I didn't want to interrupt. I wanted them to complete. It's a question that I posed on the forum, whether if it can be responded to, or if I must repeat it. You have responded well to the first one, but I was also attached to that was the foreign weather app, whether they had any impact in your work and what was the impact. That was the question. Maybe you didn't put it up. Yes, thanks, Honorable Chairperson.
Yeah. Well, you spoke about that when you presented the APP. I'll just repeat that which you said in the last slide. The apps. I think there was a submission that there's some competitors, I think, in the space. So yeah, maybe if you can just reach one of them, maybe that.
Thanks, Chair. On the app space, we do have aggressive competition from foreign, like your AccuWeather, which comes bundled with your smartphones, and I think there's over hundreds of them. If you just go into the applications and type weather, you get a number of them. However, what we have done as an organization through some of our strategic partners, we currently have two apps which are sold. And you will see when you go into those platforms, they are powered by source behind the scenes. The first one is the AfriGIS, which is but it's called Weather Smart. So you must in your phones look for Weather Smart, and then we have the other one which is very big and it's got a number of subscribers which generates quite a good non-regulated revenue for us. We've got about 1.5 million subscribers on that app. It's Africa Weather app. So we are trying on Honorable Mabili to also be innovative in that space. Obviously, SOS is more a scientific organization than it's a technological base, so we bring in strategic partners, alliances on board to assist us bridge that particular gap. So yes, we have competition, but the advantage with SOS is that there is radar data, which most of the apps are using satellite data. So we have an advantageous edge on the apps, and I think the biggest thing now is to grow that, and hence we went onto the Facebook platform, and it has been growing. The users of our apps and our social media platforms are growing. We are currently working as well in revamping our website because that is the first point of interaction with the organization, so that there is easily data available. Thank you.
I guess
some of the things that are being mentioned, they are just more of a repetition, because we did have an extensive engagement when SOS presented the APP. I guess with the quarterly report, it was something that comes from the previous focus, because we could not do it, so we had to come here. But it was it's more of a formality than anything, because we did engage extensively. There's an issue that emerged when we were discussing the APP on we're scheduled for the 7th of June. A briefing on Committee for Tariff Regulation. The DG did propose that we need to have this workshop and we agreed. So we're scheduled for the 7th, where we are going to be taken through. I guess it will also partly respond to the question that Honorable Pedig was raising about Swanee and so forth, to understand the tariff on the regulated one, but I guess there will also be a presentation on the non-regulated revenue for the organization. But I think from my side, generally, the report does point to sustained performance. There's not much areas which are red or amber. So there, I think the committee can applaud you on your continued good performance. Of course, there's only one. No, actually, there's no one term outstanding, because the last quarter came to an end at the end of March. So I guess now you are busy in the process of compiling the annual report. So the full picture will then emerge when you deal with the annual report sometime later this year. In October, yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. Any concluding remarks from the chair? Nothing?
Thank you, Chair. We'd just like to thank you for giving us the opportunity of presenting this report to you, because we're coming back for the second time.
All right. Thank you very much. Honorable Minister, any concluding remarks? Okay. All right, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, Minister, thank you very much for coming. We're going to have a 5 minutes for the break. And then after that, we will convene as a committee. We just want to, Thursday, we are going to have a formal meeting where we will adopt the program. The report. The report on the annual performance plans and so forth. And the budget vote. It was the 25th, we are going to discuss the budget vote. The minister will present the vote, and the committee will deliberate in parliament in the new plenary. So we must just go through the report, and so we are going to do that after 5 minutes. I think that we must just adjust and allow everybody to leave, but whoever wants to remain is allowed to depart, and then we will continue. So can we be back by, say, 4:12? Thank you, the meeting again.
Thank you. Yeah. About
The intention, colleague, is just to distribute this report so that the members can have an opportunity for today, tomorrow, and Thursday morning we come back to look at the report, make amendments so that we can better approve the report. But in the meantime, can we ask that if there's anything that members pick up, can they submit comments to the content advisor, Dr. Scorpio Ward? Yeah, if there's any comment between now and Thursday, if no one can just make submit them to Dr. Watt, and then when we meet on Thursday morning, it's just going to be an hour meeting from 9 to 10, and then we approve the report.
Honourable Chair, I don't know if it's possible, but is there any way we can meet at 8:30, half an hour earlier, because we have caucus commitments at 9:30 and I don't want to miss anything.
Oh, your caucus starts at 9:30?
Yes, yes. So if we can meet half an hour earlier, that would be first class for us.
Okay. Yeah. 8:30 is fine. Traffic is a big problem coming here in Cape Town on the N2. But then it means members must get their buses at 7 in the morning. I'll be here at half past 8. G2. What's the G26. G26. I think it's next to the house chamber. Next to the chamber. Honourable Makwe.
Yeah, so Chair, we can just allow everything that needs to be adopted to the adopted then, because I don't think it's too much time for a conference.
Okay.
We need the program, we need the budget report, all that, if we could just look at the whole matter. Because I don't think we need much time for a conference or to submit it to our end of everything.
Okay, so the program will then basically be a revised one. The second chair to revise it, because it does look like we will not be able to do public hearings in this term, because there is a requirement to publish and all of those things, give people, give the members of the public an opportunity to make comments. So we'll only be able to do the public hearing in the next term after recess. So the program has changed, and she will distribute it today. So the same way the comments, you can comment on it, and then we'll do the program together with the report on Thursday. The budget vote is going to be on the 25th in the afternoon. So members may write, may start writing their speeches, those who are going to debate. Yeah. Any other thing?
No.
Going, gone. Okay. The meeting is adjourned, and I think we'll meet on Thursday at 8:30. Okay, thank you very much, members.
Thank you,
How do you come there and say, I'm going to eat
and then I'll take it.